Thursday, July 22nd. I woke about 5:30 to hear Lyndon say, almost as though he were in the middle of a sentence, but he'd been interrupted. I don't want to get in a war, and I don't see any way out of it. I've got to call up 600,000 boys, make them leave their homes and their families. It was as though he were talking out loud, not especially to me. I hoped the refrain hadn't been in his mind all night long. Feeling like the boy who leaves the burning deck, I went to my own room to try to get another hour or two of sleep, fitful and unsatisfactory. And so I got up at 7 and started a busy day devoted entirely to beautification. First, a little bit of work with Patsy on the mail. And then at 11, Mary Lasker and Nash Castro and Liz came. We set a date for the next meeting of the Beautification Committee, 24th of September, after Mary's back from Europe. We asked two more people to join us on the committee, Robert Weaver from the National Housing, and Mr. Currier, a relative of the Paul Mellon, who has the knowledge and the interest to be helpful if he joins, according to Mary. And then a big problem, our sales package, our booklet, which hopefully will show the before and afters of a small square, a triangle in Washington, and how much it will cost, of an unplanted school, and of one with some wisely chosen, hardy, flowering trees and shrubs, of the great splendid projects of the Washington Monument Grounds and Haynes Point. All sorts of packages, ranging from $1,000 to $100,000. And not to leave out the single trees is my plea, because one of the most delightful recognitions we have had as gifts are from school buses full of children who come to Washington on their spring vacation, see the cherry trees, and then send us a check for about $17 to plant a cherry tree sometime, somewhere, in memory of that trip. There have been about 4 or 5 such incidents. I surely want to see them make somebody's column, particularly along about next February and March, when other busloads of children will be planning their trips to Washington at cherry blossom time. And of course, the big discussion was fall planting, and how could we get interest stirred up in it by writing a letter or telegram to the mayors all over the country, to governors all over the country. It would be a request for cooperation, perhaps for calling a conference in their own communities or states. Anyhow, some sort of a spur to action. And then I read them the draft of the little story that life may use along with its spread. From my informal talk with her, Liz has woven it together, picking up Nash's facts and figures that I think might be useful. It was a full morning. At 1 o'clock, Diana came for lunch. She had just called me the night before about something that may be a key to enlisting support of young people all over the country. She's going to a national conclave of Girl Scouts. There'll be some 10,000 of them there. And she's going to meet with the leaders, the planners, and they have already offered to host a seminar or gathering in Washington of the leaders of youth groups. It sounds like they would mean, besides themselves, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, 4-H, Campfire, Girls Clubs, all of the youth service organizations. These would not be the young people themselves, but the program planners, the adults, and I would hope a sprinkling of the leadership among the young. What an army this would make if we could really build a fire under them to start planting campaigns and education campaigns and cleanup campaigns to cherish this country and think for the future. These are the folks we want to reach if only we had the salesman. We made it clear that the White House couldn't run such a conference. It's too big a job for our little staff. But I'd surely lend my time and any possible speech, tea, attendance, anything I could do to enlist them, to bring them into the fold. They are the key, the young folks. Diana left, thrilled and elated. She's really going out there as a member of the board of the Girl Scouts and to tell them about the Peace Corps, of course. This is an addendum. She told me her daddy was going to get in the next day. She'll just miss him. She was leaving at 5, and so too was Mary leaving shortly after 5. So after lunch, I said, let's get Walter Washington and drive around and look at some of the schools, the proposed ones for planting, because we've got this money, and it's high time we set about choosing a school for a fall planting and try to have a model school, a model playground, and a few model triangles or squares or parks to show for our work. So we drove into the Cardoza district, second precinct, I believe it is, past Walter Jones School, the Bernard School, the John L. Young Playground, and then past the Kennedy Playground. I had two sort of revelations along the way. These schools were indeed dreary and ugly, though adequate-looking brick structures. A little woebegone grass in front, no planting. If any playground, solid concrete with very sparse play equipment. But the unusual thing was the number of broken window panes, sometimes as many as 20 in the front of the building. Broken for what reason? Bored young folks, angry young folks, frustrated. Why? An ugly symptom of some disease today. I asked Walter, that hard-working apostle of Let's Do Something on this committee, how the two schools had fared at the S. Klein Department Store and Heckinger's had planted last spring. He beamed and said that the number of broken window panes had gone down markedly. There had only been 2 since that had taken place in May. And then the other revelation was to see the Kennedy Playground, a boisterous carnival sort of place, simply boiling with children, playing on an old streetcar, an old fire engine, a salvaged ship, airplane, train, all of which had been painted bright red, green, blue, purple, striped, circled, a veritable carnival of color. Same sort of thing with some screening of planting, perhaps a fence with some vines around it, a mere sprinkling of flowering trees around the edges, no grass, no use for grass, some benches under the trees for mamas to sit and watch. And this might be the very recipe for a high-density population spot in Washington. If there were the land, the equipment, much of it would be readily available from the Defense Department, from all sorts of wrecking places. The land, alas, would be prohibitively high, but it's worth investigating. We drove back past Garfield Terrace, which stands on the grounds where once stood Garfield Hospital. Linda was born there. Garfield Terrace is now home for the indigent elderly, quite charmingly planted, with one of the handsomest views of Washington from the rooftop garden, Walter Washington tells me. And Kay Graham is going to do something about furnishing it and making it especially beautiful, he says. We returned to the White House about 5:30 in time for Mary to catch her plane and said goodbye. She's off to the south of France in a complete change from work. I'm going to be the biggest vacation buff in the world when this job is over. I just hope she won't forget me by then. She'd showed me pictures of the fairy tale villa she rents every August and has invited me several times. Then I talked to Linda. I sounded short and unhappy, and she said, "Here, I swam all the way from Canada to talk to you. 65-degree water." Sure enough, she had. In the boundary waters between the United States and Canada, she had swum a half a mile across one of the Minnesota lakes and then back to the campsite on the American side. If she can just write like she can talk, she'll make that a good story for National Geographic. Lyndon came home a little before 9, called the Ed Clarks, and brought them down for dinner. To think all day, and I had, is a hard job for me. It should give me more sympathy for Lyndon. And as soon as dinner was over, about 10:30, I was ready for a massage. Thank goodness Anne is such home folks that I could ask her to curl up on the bed while I had one and tell me the news of Austin, of Doug and Leela. And here it was bad. Doug is being hounded out of his law partnership because of his espousal of the Democratic Party in last fall's campaign. One of the oldest families in the state, one of the most securely placed in wealth and position, but not immune to their neighbors, to their friends' anger when they break the mores of their part of the world. Anne was divided between excitement about going to Australia and tears about Leela. She's already sold her house in Austin, is moving her things to her little medallion house in Deep East Texas. Tired as I was, it was hard to go to sleep after Ann left, and I wound up trying to read myself to sleep, making a rather poor choice, in fact, because I've had a sampling of the letters about beer and Catholicism brought to me, and they're better 7 a.m. reading than 12 midnight.